You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head.
Don't believe me, just watch.
This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on RadioInfluence.com.
Hey, it's me, the Fabulous Sports Babe. It's another one of my lovely podcasts, which I love doing here. By the way, do I always have to say you can hear it on Radio Influence? You can hear it at every place in the whole wide world. Go and find it. It's hard for me, but you can figure this out. I have to tell you a couple things that have been making me crazy. First of all, football. Just hurry up and get it. It's the only thing I care about. But since I have no life, which I found out this summer, I have absolutely no life, I've spent a lot of time watching TV, an awful lot of time, way too much watching TV. And I have fallen in love with something called Ice Lake Rebels. It's embarrassing for me to say this. But if you're not seeing this thing, it happens to be on the Animal Channel, which, by the way, little kitties going hi to you, forget it. They're killing crocodiles and everything. They're not the nice little animal planet they used to be. I'm on this Ice Lake Rebels, and I'm just telling you, it's 10 o'clock on a Friday. I actually have it in the VCR. What is that, the VCR? What's that called, the DVR? Something damn like that. I put it in this thing, and I watch it. These people are in the Arctic Circle. Do you know where the hell that is? They have two lakes, V Lake, and then everybody else is in this Great Slave Lake or whatever it is. It's way the hell up there. And I'm just so amazed by it. They have a guy that they call Chef, but they have to put subtitles underneath him because you can't understand anything that he's saying. And they're all, I don't know, I guess you would call them Inuit or Alaskan Indian type things. But they have a little bit of that Canadian, but they're way the hell up there. So, like, when he speaks, they have to put subtitles underneath because I don't know what he's saying. And the rest of the people are kind of squirrely as to what they're saying. But these people live on a lake in the middle of nowhere. They don't really want to be with anybody else. There are other people in their so-called community. And I'm just fascinated by the whole thing. I'm fascinated by the way the people act. I'm completely fascinated by the fact that sometimes people are now married, which I find kind of interesting in this, and they live on these kind of put them together kind of houseboats, and it floats around like, you know, the ice is breaking up at the end of May. Was it freeze in like September? So they have like 2 or 3 months where they can have like a garden or something. I don't know what they have, but there's only about, I don't know, maybe 10 people that are out there. And I'm just fascinated by this, and I don't know why. So I'm seeing these two people who get together, and his name is Kyle Enzo, and he's as skinny as my finger. He's this big, and I think he grew up in this, you know, way up there with, like, I don't even know if they lived in a tent. I guess they lived in a cabin when he was growing up. But he is all in love now with this woman who has come to be his semi-girlfriend. I guess they're married, something like that. And I guess they went out one time and she didn't know him. But when they went out one time, what's his name? Kyle? Kyle. He shoots the first moose and then he shoots the other moose. He shoots the first moose and then the second moose. And the girl says, "That's the guy for me." I said, "I got to see this." She said, "That's the guy for me." And he said, "Well, you have to skin all this and you do the muskox and you can use it." And I'm like, "What the hell's a muskox anyway?" So I'm completely in love with this. I'm so in love with this. It's almost frightening, I have to tell you. I've got things to talk about today. We'll talk with Christine Brennan today. USA Today, website, everything. She has more awards than you could ever imagine. I'm always kidding her about it. Whenever I see her, she's always doing something like that. But we'll talk to her. We'll talk to her a lot about doing the Olympics and the things that she has done with that. But also, she's been in this probably as long as I have, I think, in this business. And I thought we would find out about it. She started in Miami. And I think she was the first person to cover an NFL team. And so we'll talk some more about that. Now, I am the Fabulous Sports Babe, in case you didn't know that. And I've got football. I have even more football to talk about, but we have to talk to Christine Brennan coming up next. I know that you have been very busy. We've all been busy. Wait, let me just tell you up front, okay? I'm one of those people that think Tom Brady could do anything, and I'm completely behind him. Okay, I'm just giving you that up front. Because they said, but he did this and he did that. And I said, he could never do that. So I'm that kind of idiot you have to deal with. Let's talk about that, since that's the big thing. They're all worried about Deflategate, which I thought was really blown out of proportion, actually.
Yeah, you know, I certainly see that. I wrote a column the first day it happened back in January where I said, I don't know whether to laugh out loud or to get mad at Tom Brady for cheating. And I must admit, I still kind of feel that way. And I think everyone's scratching their heads. You know, was this a big deal? Was it not? Obviously, you say it wasn't. And the other side of it is, of course, that it's up to a matter of the integrity of the game. And can you trust what you're watching on the field? And if someone's cheating, whether it's steroids or deflating footballs, I think steroids are worse. Obviously, I've covered that story since the Olympics in Seoul in 88, front row seat to the men's 100 meters there, and then that story breaking 3 days later with Ben Johnson. So we were off and running on the steroids era. So I treat the performance-enhancing drug issue incredibly seriously. And this did not arise to that, in my humble opinion. On the other hand, if you're cheating, and the person I listened to on this was Don Shula. Remember a couple months ago, babe, where he said, I never thought of this, I've never heard of this, we never did this. And again, now I know there's conflict on whether or not what this was, you know, if the balls just somehow were a little deflated or if it was an act, you know, those guys went to the locker room and did something, which I think we think something happened. But you know, what's interesting to me is that we are speaking on the first anniversary of the Ray Rice video appearing. Mm. And the nation was outraged and wanted someone, in this case Roger Goodell, to go crazy and throw the bum out, right? Throw them all out.
Right, right.
So you want, it's like the country's screaming out, you know, we're sick of these clowns. We want to get rid of these people. Now, I'm not for a moment comparing and saying that they're similar between deflated footballs and domestic violence. You know me, of course, I'm not. Mm-hmm. But the idea of tough punishment is something that plays well in Peoria. Mm-hmm. It's not playing well in our courts. And this is a fascinating thing for me to see how a league buffeted by the winds of Twitter and Facebook and public opinion has to now deal with the judicial system, which is saying, no, 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 you cannot do what it appears a lot of people want you to do. That, to me, is the overriding issue of the whole thing.
You know, when you talk about this, and it's interesting because you brought up the Twitter thing, and it made me think, if we were doing this 10 years ago, Twitter wouldn't have been around. And it's really only been, let's say, in the last decade. And, you know, yesterday I was doing Ohio State. I was crazy. I was watching and blah, blah. And some guy was going, the Hokies are going to win this. And I had to, like, write back to him. You know, and I thought to myself, if Twitter wasn't here, I said, how dare you say that about Ohio State? How dare you? But it's kind of interesting. And now with something like this, there are many people out there who believe that this Deflategate meant something. And so they will hate Tom Brady. They will always hate the Patriots. Yet there's something about it because you get on one side or the other of something and you can't get away, and that's it.
No, well, it is. I mean, as great as Twitter can be in terms of allowing us to break news, you know, as journalists to use it as a tool to get the word out, which I love, instead of having to wait for the paper to show up at the doorstep at 6 a.m. the next morning to break the news. You know, you can literally blast it right out and watch it explode online. And that's really fun for a journalist. I love it. But the flip side is that, yes, everyone's arguing. Everyone's online. Everyone has a voice. Some obviously have a few followers. Others have thousands or tens of thousands, hundreds of whatever. And I try to keep that in perspective, that if someone's yelling and they've got 200 followers, they would get more of a reaction if they stood up in a high school assembly and started screaming. So, you know, we need to keep perspective on all these things. And I also do not for a second countenance any kind of terrible words or bad things being said. You know, I figure 16-year-old girls might be reading my Twitter account, and I want to make sure that it is acceptable for anyone to read. So, you know, there's all that. But you're right. People take a side, and it's like what we see with the political conversation, right, with Fox or with MSNBC. It's all this way or it's all that way. And as someone who's been very critical of whether it was Goodell on domestic violence at the beginning or more on the side of punishment for Brady as I was, believing that something did happen, I absolutely see the other side. And you and I can have a friendly disagreement and talk about the issues. And that, you're right, it's just not happening online. And I think that's to all of our cultural detriment.
You know, one of the things, Christine, as I think about it, you said the thing about steroids. You were there for so much of what happened. Talk about Ben Johnson and everything that took on. Christine, when I see the Yankees right now and A-Rod gets up, I don't care anymore because I don't. Yes, he got nailed. Other people got nailed. I'm not so sure about pitchers. Pitchers that I love who've done wonderfully, 300 games and all that. I say to myself, we never talk about the pitchers. So I'm to the point now where the steroids thing, I'm kind of over it. Whatever they're doing right now, I just don't think they're caught up to it yet. Does that make sense when it comes to steroids?
Sure does. I mean, what you're saying, I think I understand, is that like the bad chemists are way ahead of the good chemists.
Right, exactly.
Right. So, you know, and I know a lot of people get confused by this, and I understand, you know, that, wait a minute, they're being tested, how are they getting away with it? Well, keep in mind that Lance Armstrong never failed a drug test, at least publicly, and there was word that he did fail one, but in other words, mm-hmm. he passed hundreds of drug tests as the ultimate cheater in all of our society, really, not just sports, I mean, because of the cancer component of his life and what he right. what he meant to so many people. Marion Jones. Never failed a drug test, and one of the worst, certainly in the Olympic world, maybe the worst other than Ben Johnson mm-hmm. in terms of cheating. And so, yeah, we catch some of these people, but we don't catch a lot of them. And so, yes, you do wonder if what you're watching out there on the field of play is a tainted product. And it's you know, the money that would have to be invested and the continuing research, which is being invested, USADA, the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, and the leagues that do their own testing, although they should really do it with an independent group like USADA, all of them are spending lots of money, but they'd have to spend a lot more money to really, really catch and be aware of it and also keep the samples, blood and urine,
right.
so that in a few years you can test for the new stuff that's being devised in some lab right now by the bad guys. And that's the shame of it. And I think that's, frankly, Dave, why a lot of people just tune out. And, you know, you and I could go tap on their shoulders as they're sitting at Nats Park or Yankee Stadium or Wrigley or Dodger Stadium and talk to America and say, hey, you know, that outfielder, he's on with this, and the third baseman was, you know, had a suspension for this, and the guy had mm-hmm. that. And you can understand why a man, a woman with their kids, their family, would turn around and say, just let me enjoy the game for 3 hours. Can I have a little respite from my life for 3 hours? Mm-hmm. And I think that's why baseball has the fan base it does, because people just say, I get it, I know, but don't tell me every little detail. Can I just enjoy the game?
You know, Christine, one of the things that I was thinking about, and we were talking about the Olympics, and we'll go that way, but you've done, 8,000 books already? I mean, you have a lot of that. I mean, I'm kidding with you, but in the middle of this, you've done USA. How long have you been at USA Today?
Since 1997. Yeah, it's a few short years.
But you've been there now going on 20 years, and or at least 15 years or so, but you've done that. You've done the website. You've done it for a long time, and you kind of do a lot of the TV thing. When you started out, is it your dad was a principal? Is that true in Toledo? Is that true?
My dad was not a principal, no, but he was a sports fan. He played high school football on the south side of Chicago, Hyde Park High School, and was at Drake playing for a year and then went into the Army at the end of World War II, occupation of Germany. So he was a football guy and a sports guy, and I'm the oldest of four kids. I have two sisters and a brother. So it wasn't older brothers. It was my dad and it was me, and we would throw the baseball, and I never, quote-unquote, threw like a girl, which I hope we can mm-hmm. take that term, babe, and throw it out because, of course, millions of girls throw the ball the proper way. We're teaching all of our daughters and nieces and girls next door to throw the ball properly now. But back then, there was a lot of girls who didn't know, and I knew how. I fired the ball from behind my ear, and my dad taught me how to do that. So then we had season tickets for Detroit Tigers, Toledo Mud Hens, Michigan football, University of Toledo football, and I was off and running on this incredible love of sports. And a father who was Mr. Republican, a Rock Rib Republican, who was also the biggest feminist I knew. I stress, different kind of Republican, liberal Republican, mm-hmm. which doesn't exist anymore. But so very much socially more moderate to liberal than the Republican Party is now. But of the day, they were, and that's what the GOP was, Gerald Ford and Charles Percy and all those, you know, mm-hmm. Rockefeller, et cetera. And so I grew up that way, and I was shown by my father, that there would always be a place for me in sports. And while everyone else was telling girls no, I had a mom and a dad, and both of my mom too, who were saying, no, you can do this. And so what a wonderful opportunity they gave me to play sports. And I was really the only girl doing it. But then that led to, of course, love of journalism, love of writing, and then I put it all together when I went to Northwestern, and here I am.
Well, but you made a book about you and your father, right?
That is correct. Best Seat in the House came out, 9 years ago? Father-daughter memoir, absolutely.
So when you go from Toledo and you go to Northwestern, and whenever I called that you have to go to Northwestern, I always go, she went to a real college, unlike everyone else, you know, that you did that. And yet, did you go into that when you were there, when you went to Northwestern? Did you go more towards the writing in that direction?
Absolutely. The Medill School of Journalism is, of course, I believe the best in the country. Obviously, there are others who would say, no, Missouri or Columbia for grad school in New York. But to me, I did the research as a junior, you know, sophomore, junior in high school, knowing I loved journalism and working for the high school paper, editor of the high school paper, my senior year, co-editor, and all of that. And so I just did the research, and I saw Northwestern was ranked the best by as many people as I could figure out, looking at those big college books back then, and no internet, of course, to check it out. And so I just decided that it would be Northwestern, and I got an early decision. My parents were both from Chicago, and even though I grew up in Toledo, we spent a lot of time in Chicago. And so the thought of the Big Ten, loved Michigan, loved the Big Ten. Big Ten football, Big Ten sports, a small, you know, tiny private school, only 6,500 students when I was there. Now it's still only about 7,000 or 8,000. So the only private school in the Big Ten, one of the great universities in our country. Yes. And I could go there and see the Big Ten sports and yet also be at this wonderful academic place. And so it was a no-brainer, got an early decision, and all these years later, I'm still obviously very involved with Northwestern and with Medill.
But when you went there, it seems to me that you went to be a newspaper writer, never knowing what was going to take place in the last 10 years or so, what's happened to newspaper writings. And it's kind of like, If you're, I was talking to a friend of mine and they're going to a university and he said, I'm going to be a journalist. And I thought to myself, it's kind of hard to do that now, isn't it?
It is.
Go ahead.
Well, and you know, I'm very involved at Northwestern, and I'm a professor of practice. Mike Wilbon and I were the same year, met first day freshman year. Wilbon and I, and just was with him at the Stanford game the other day. Went over to that joyous, delightful affair, Northwestern beating Stanford. So, you know, he and I are professors of practice. I'm on the board of trustees at Northwestern. So, just as full disclosure, those things are important to mention. And I wanted newspapers. Wilbon wanted newspapers. A lot of us, including Mike and I, would go down to the library in Fisk Hall at Northwestern and just, you know, pick up the newspapers that we had internships with at Northwestern, and including like the Macon Journal, I think, and Lexington Herald, where I did an internship as part of Northwestern's program. All of these experiences and just to hold a newspaper in your hand, Lexington, Macon, Georgia, whatever it might be, and you just go, this would be so, Salem, Oregon, this would be so cool to work there someday. It was a total love of the craft, total love of writing, and the idea that you could work for a newspaper no matter how big or small. And I think that is what's missing now as kids say, hey, I just want to be on TV. Well, Wilbon and I say, you know, and we've done this together at Northwestern and other places. We talk to these kids and we look at each other, you want to talk or do you want to talk? Well, you know, come back after 20 years and, you know, work for 20 years and write or whatever. No, it's a different path that he took and that I took to do TV. Obviously, he's full-time TV now. I'm not, but I do a lot, as you said. And it's because we had the foundation in writing and journalism. We didn't want to be stars. We wanted to be good journalists. And the rest, all whatever has come after that. All an offshoot of the foundation that we laid in the very solid principles of journalism.
It seems to me, Christine, that when you got into that, whether it was radio or TV, how did you go from that newspaper to saying, oh, we'd like you over here, we'd like you over here? I mean, at what point were you doing this? And then they said, we want you to be on this TV, we want you to be on this radio. Was there a time then when it went from being just, it must have been a time when it changed for you there.
It did. It's a great question, babe. And I got some attention when I was covering football at the Miami Herald, which is where I started my career, the Hurricanes, the Dolphins, Florida Gators. TV there a little bit, but then coming to Washington, coming to the Washington Post in 84 and covering Washington's NFL team from 85 to 87, not using that name anymore. And and then I did a lot of TV, local TV, features, talk shows, analysis shows. That's when I really got a lot of it. So that was in that time period. And then the really big one nationally for me was Tanya Nancy. I'm the only serious journalist you'll find who will say that Tanya Harding changed her life. Tanya Harding absolutely changed my life. All of a sudden, I was on CNN. I was doing, because I had no contracts at the Lillehammer Olympics, I still was not contracted for any one network. I would be on the Today Show and Good Morning America. I would be on Nightline and NBC Nightly News and CBS and NPR. And that's when I really started ESPN. Also, I did have a contract with ESPN back then. And I was all over doing TV, and that's when I really started to do it and realized I loved it as an analyst, as a talking head, whatever you'd call it. And so then from that point on, within a year or two, ABC, I had a contract, and I've basically been contracted with ABC News ever since, you know, the mid to late 90s. And then CNN since Ray Rice, actually, a year ago right now. And so I'm very fortunate to be able to talk about these issues in sports. Sports is a cultural issue, frankly, for both ABC, for World News, GMA, Nightline, the Sunday morning This Week show, and then CNN, all kinds of programming. I really enjoy it, and I'm very honored and feel very lucky to be able to do that.
But you still, it's still the writing to you first, though, isn't it? Even though
it is. Right?
Tell me. Tell me.
If you said to me, you have to give up one, TV or writing, you know, TV or newspaper, you know, USA Today, this would be a tough decision, and I wouldn't want to have to make it, and thankfully, knock on wood, I hope I don't. But if I did, if that was the, you know, the deal with the devil that I had to make, I would, I'd still stay a writer, because at heart, I am a writer. I love the idea. I've written books, as you said, seven books. That's hard, and I am not written a book in a long time, because it really is hard, and you toss and turn at 2 in the morning, and then you wake up at 4 in the morning and say, okay, that's it, and you work, put in a 20-hour day when you're crashing a book. And I'm so loving not doing that and doing TV where it's just done, doing a column where it's done, it's in the paper, it's online within 15, 20 minutes, done, and speeches. I do a lot of speaking around the country. So that's what I'm loving to do right now. But the writing is what I am. I am, and in fact, let's be clear on this, and if any young people are listening, young aspiring journalists, so many male and female want to just go right on TV, as I said a few minutes ago.
Right, I do.
Well, you know, the writing for me is the foundation. Why am I doing more TV in my 50s than I ever did in my 20s, 30s, and 40s? It's not because I'm Miss America. I feel very comfortable with how I look and where I am in my life. But it's because I had the foundation of being a serious journalist in the Washington Post and USA Today. And so Nightline producers knew me from the Washington Post and read me. And so this is no surprise that TV wants someone who can give an opinion and have a basis for that opinion. And in this case, I've had years and years of whatever it might be, credibility. I'm sure many people who don't like my work think this is all ridiculous. And, you know, that's their opinion. But so all of this is built up to this moment where I'm doing more TV this year than I've ever done before. And I'm smiling as I say it because I feel very, very lucky and fortunate. But it was the core, that strong journalism that I've got, the principles that I learned at Northwestern, that whatever I've been able to do have allowed me to be here. And so, yeah, I love it all. But the writing is really my main thing. You're absolutely right about that.
You know, sometimes when I think about this, first, let me just ask you this. You said, where are you in your life right now? Where are you?
Where am I?
Oh, yeah, where are you?
I'm having the time of my life. I love it more today than the day I started.
Wow.
I really do. I'm a kid. It's like Christmas morning every day. I mean, just yesterday I was in New York, and I was on CNN New Day. Syndica, I mean, this is not the joy, getting up at 5:15, but you know that world. You did that for years with radio, with your fabulous radio shows that you've had. And, you know, and I'm in a car going through the dark streets of New York on Labor Day at 5:45 to go to CNN at Columbus Circle to do a live hit with the morning show that includes Chris Cuomo and Michaela and Allison. Those guys are great. And you're talking Brady and Deflategate and all the NFL stuff that's going on. And then I go back and I emcee an event, a tennis event involving the U.S. Open Tennis, a breakfast. And I'm at the MC of that, which I love to do. And then I am having lunch with a friend, and then I'm actually going to ABC to do an interview with Elizabeth Vargas for 2020 that's going to air Friday night. And then I hop a train to come back to D.C. I mean, what a delightful day in New York. And, you know, made up twice, hair and makeup twice. I mean, that's hilarious. And, wow, I mean, that's just like a great, great day. And that's my quote-unquote work. So, and no columns. That was just some of the extra fun stuff I get to do now as a big part of my career. So I am one happy camper, great family, great friends, just loving everything. Let's put it this way. If a meteor comes crashing through my ceiling, God forbid, right now, and I am an ink spot in the next minute and a half, just tell everybody it was fabulous, and I loved it to the moment that the meteor came in and turned me into an ink spot. And I'm saying that, knock on wood. Hopefully that does not happen. But, you know, it's going to end someday, and I am the most appreciative person on the planet of the opportunities that I've had to do exactly what I love. I have never worked a day in my life because this is what I get to do.
You know, one of the things that I was knowing when you were talking about that, I was thinking, I take back to, let's say, 1988, and I think, I thought about Melissa and her being covering the Bears. I was thinking about that, and the reason that I'm getting to that is they came down here, the Bears came down to play the Bucks, and they wouldn't let me in the locker room because Mike Ditka would come outside, but they wouldn't let me in the locker room. And I said, I know they let them in the locker room in Chicago, but they're doing it in Tampa because they can. And I used to be outside, and I was stringing for like CBS or something, and I'm doing it behind a bus that's going bum, 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 bum the whole time, and I'm trying to do this thing with Ditka or whoever was there. And I just remember that because I thought, I bet they still let them in Chicago, but I was still going through that down here. Do you have days when they stopped you, but you were working at the Herald, which was different for me working at a radio station?
Oh, no, you're right, though. Back then, in their early 80s, it was catch as catch can. It was really haphazard. And when I came to the Washington Post in the fall of 84, babe, I was covering the NFL as a beat before I started covering the local team, and with Joe Gibbs and that whole gang and Theismann and Riggins, and I mean, what a time, Dave. But yeah. It was really they won football games back then in Washington. Shocking. People don't recognize that now. And so even at the Washington Post, like, they'd send me to go cover a game in Chicago, and I'd be in the locker room. And Dallas, you remember the Cowboys had an interview room. So you'd have to sit outside or go to the interview room. But the men would go right in. And Leslie Visser and I were covering a New York Giants game. And she's at the Boston Globe, and I'm at the Washington Post. So huge newspapers, right? Huge. Two of our biggest five newspapers in the country. Washington Post, Boston Globe. And we're the beat writers. We're the reporters on this game, the Giants against whomever. And the men reporters up from all papers, big and small, go right in the locker room. And we're stuck in the weight room. WEIGHT, but as Leslie said, WAIT, the weight room, as only our friend Leslie could. And we're waiting for a couple players, including some guy who didn't even play in the game, are brought to us. That was untenable to have these huge newspapers. And you, of course, doing your job, absolutely unacceptable to allow this to, you know, continue. And that's why Pete Rozelle, then the commissioner of the NFL, in 85, this was happened to be the year that at the Washington Post was putting me on the beat here, Rozelle issued an edict saying all locker rooms had to have equal access for male and female reporters. And that was summer of 85. And that's when it changed. And thankfully, that's 30 years ago now that equal access has been the law. And the NFL was the last of the four big leagues, Major League Baseball, NBA, and NFL, and NHL had all resolved it sooner than that. So it's a long time ago now, but those were not fun days. You are absolutely right. Women were not able to do their jobs. It was a workplace issue. It had to change, and thankfully it did change.
What's your read on RG3? It just made me think about it. I said, well, let's find out what you think. They told him he's the third quarterback.
Yeah, what a mess. What a mess.
I mean, you're there. You see it in a different way because you're from D.C., but what do you see there?
Yeah, well, what I see is a guy that I wonder if we'll ever play a snap or down again here in Washington. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple thoughts. One is, obviously, great quarterback in college, Heisman Trophy winner, very deserving. And also, great year with Luck, Andrew Luck, also coming out that same year. And obviously, one has taken off and the other has not. RG3 is not the same man he was in college because, of course, he had the knee injury, another knee surgery. and he's had concussions, and he just cannot be the quarterback that he once was. So the question remains, can RG3 be a viable NFL quarterback? Not even necessarily a good one, but just a, you know, well, mm-hmm. good would be good, but adequate, good, or great quarterback as a different kind of player, different physical characteristics than he was in high school or and than he was in college. And that certainly the answer is not yet known because his career is not over, but I really doubt that he can be that vibrant, dynamic running threat that he was, and that's why the Washington drafted him, because of what they saw in him. So I think it's unlikely that he can do that. And if he can't do that, then, you know, will a team take a chance on him at some point? Of course. But I don't see that the future is here in Washington, babe. And it's a mess. It's a shame for a guy who's not a bad guy. You know, obviously a great family, both mom and dad in the military. Good role model for people. Obviously gets on social media too much, and there's a little, needs to calm that down and some of these issues over the years. But the team is so dysfunctional from the owner, Dan Snyder, on down, and Gruden, and clearly if the owner's making decisions or the general manager or Bruce Allen is now, you know, still making decisions, it's a mess. And probably the best thing that would happen to RG3 would be to get out of town. Mm-hmm. But I'm not so sure that he's ever going to be the quarterback that anyone thought he would be.
I have a couple of questions that I'm thinking about. The first one is, what about Donald Trump leading all the polls and everybody loves him out there? And, you know, if you've been around and you've watched politics for a long time, you're kind of like, he just keeps going, I'm the biggest one, I'm the biggest one. At one point he said, why bother to have an election? You can just put me in. I went, forget the Constitution. But what do you see in that? I mean, it's kind of interesting to see how people are just cuckoo about him right now. And I know it's a year away. But it's kind of interesting.
Oh, it's crazy. It's just crazy. I mean, it's embarrassing on one level. This is our country and the way the world looks at us. It's a joke. It's not reality. Even though it's become reality TV, it is not reality TV. This is our nation and our system of picking a president. My goodness, what a mess. And that's embarrassing. But I laugh like everyone else, and I'm intrigued and just aghast. Obviously, the comments about immigrants and about women, Megyn Kelly, are awful and unacceptable. And yet, yes, we have giggled and thought about it and probably rolled our eyes, but it's disgusting. And the fact that the other candidates, as I said to you, my dad, Mr. Republican, my dad was Bush's vice chair in Ohio in 1988, the first George Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush. I know him. What a great man. Last time I saw him was the 2008 Ryder Cup at Valhalla. And we chat for several minutes. I mean, I walk over to him and big hugs and all that. I mean, I'm not saying, oh, big deal, but I'm letting you know that's my background. And I voted with my dad's candidates for many, many, many years. And my father passed away. Jim Brennan, was his name. And he passed away in 2003, in August of 2003. He would be disgusted by this turn of the Republican Party. I know I can say that. He was a moderate Republican. John Kasich is the closest to what my dad would be. And I know Governor Kasich. I met him as a congressman through my dad, and my brother knows him. And he's the sanest person by far, and he'll probably get a couple percent of the vote. Maybe not. Maybe things will change. But they're all playing to the right, and it is absolutely disgusting. I don't recognize this party. I don't mind saying this. I'm not a political person, and obviously, but talking to you on your podcast, happy to say it. That it is unrecognizable to me, the Republican Party of my youth, that I grew up in and that I loved, and that my dad loved and our family did. So that they're pandering to the right, and there are so many millions of women and girls and growing up with Title IX who are growing up in a different world, and I don't understand why they are not trying to capture that vote. And the immigrant vote, the immigration issue, the wonderful millions and millions of people who've come to this country, and those who are here illegally that we need to figure out, and we cannot just kick them all out because
build
we're
realists.
Yeah, and we're not going to build a wall. Come on, that is absurd. So, again, I'm a sports columnist, but I don't mind saying a few things because this was my childhood and my life. And my father, I think I can safely say, would be absolutely disgusted by this. and my mom and dad would have been pro-gay rights and pro-women's reproductive health. They were, guaranteed they were, on that issue, on women's reproductive health issues. And this Republican Party, do you want to win any more elections, as Lindsey Graham said, right? They're, as Jeb Bush said, women are 53% of the population. So these are the things my dad would want me to say, and I'm happy to say them to you because you know me, I'm an honest person.
You know, one of the things I was going to ask you, and I'll let you go, but one of the things I look at now is I see people who are like 35, pushing 40, and they've got an 11-year-old kid, and the kid's going to play whatever. But it's different than when I'm looking at 50, beyond 50, if you want to know the truth, and that I see these people, and of course they want their kids to play. And, you know, mine didn't want me to do anything. Anything I did on my own, I always got in trouble because of all the stuff I did sports-wise. You know, I didn't have that kind of thing. Yet, if you're 35 or 40 years old and your kid wants to play, it's cool right now. It wasn't so cool 30 years ago. At all, and I just think it's so great to see, you know, a guy who's 40 years old will go, what do you mean my kid can't play?
You know? And, well, you're talking girls, right? And,
right, I'm talking play. About a kid, that a girl, what do you mean they can't play? Of course they can play, whereas my parents would say, well, they don't want you to play.
Right. You know? this is the story of our time. I mean, we just talked about Donald Trump and the nonsense and garbage and all this other and the hatred from some of the other candidates as well, and the right wing just, you know, absolutely closed-mindedness. I don't get it. I don't understand how that wins elections. It doesn't. Anyway, but the biggest issue in my mind, in our country, I think the most important law, babe, in our country over the last 43 years is Title IX, signed by Richard Nixon, moderate Republican. He'd be a Democrat now with his policies. Richard Nixon, and obviously Watergate, huge, I'm not focusing on that at this moment, signed by Richard Nixon June of 72, changed the playing fields of America, changed the way we think, to your point. I mean, that girl you see in the kitchen every morning, you know, that little kid growing up with the grass-stained knees and the soccer uniform or the basketball or the volleyball or whatever, whatever she's going to be growing up, whether she's going to be a mom, a doctor, a lawyer, a broadcaster, a business person, a coach, any combination thereof, she will be better at it because she played sports. Title IX is about creating college scholarships and about Olympic athletes, the Olympics. If you love the U.S. winning Olympic gold medals, then you love Title IX because it's the women now leading the way for our country at every Olympics. And but it's not so much about creating Abby Wambach or Mia Hamm, although that's great. Mm-hmm. Carly Lloyd. That's fantastic when it happens. It's about creating better people, learning how to win and lose at a young age, teamwork and sportsmanship. And, babe, we haven't even begun to see how this is going to play out. So, yes, that one dad and mom encouraging their 8 to 10, 12-year-old daughter to play sports, that is being multiplied around the country by millions. And when that, let's say, 10-year-old girl, when she's 25, 15 years from now, guaranteed we'll have women running for president. And when that 10-year-old is 50, 40 years from now, we will have a woman running as the Democrat and a woman running as the Republican, and they will be picking female vice presidential candidates, and maybe it will be all women running for president. Not next year, not 10 years from now, 20, 30, 40 years from now. Absolutely that will be happening. And the reason that will be happening in this country, because they all learn those life lessons early on, learn how to lose, learn how to be a teammate because of Title IX. That's how big a deal Title IX is moving forward and how it's going to have an impact on our country. I hope I see a lot of it, but even if I don't, I know it's coming. It has to be coming. Law schools and med schools, more than 50% female now. Women doctors will now say men doctors 30 years from now. You know, I'm going to a male doctor. It's going to happen because the med schools are now shifting. This is what's happening. This is extraordinary, and I think most in the mainstream media haven't even, you know, acknowledged what's happening, not just in sports, but throughout our culture.
I love talking with you. It was great. Thank you so much for the insight. I do appreciate it.
The questions are great, babe. You are the best. I just love talking to you as well. Thanks so much.
How great was that to listen to Christine? And it was really good to get the Republican side of things. And about these people, who are they? I thought that was really good. I love talking with Christine. She's been around and seen so much in all of that. I'm going to, you know what? I already told you about my other, I got to tell you about my other thing. I'm crazy on this TV thing. I have decided that in 2017, I too will become an American Ninja Warrior. I thought it was going to be 2016, but I got to be honest with you. I got the salmon ladder down, no problem at all. I got them pretty, but I cannot do the warped wall. For you who may not know, I am vertically challenged. And because of that, me going up the new wall, and the one they did the other day, they went down and then back up. That's even worse. Now, Roller Girl says she's going to give me a boost. But I don't know if they're going to let that happen at American Ninja Warrior. But I saw a guy, and they called him an American Ninja Legend. I said, oh, God, what I'd have to be an American Ninja Legend. That's the thing I like. I like that. I've got trouble with the warp wall. And the rest of them, you know, when I look down at that, I said, once I get up there and I do that thing with that, where you put your hands up and you go like this, I already figured you can't go 5 steps. You got to do it in 3 steps. You got to go from 5 to 10 to 15. You got to do it in 3 steps. I figured it out. You can't do it in like 5 steps. You got to do it in 10. I figured this out. I'm very much in love with Ninja Warrior. And I don't know why, because I watch it. And now I'm crazy. I watch it the next day on Esquire. Did you know they have a place on Esquire? I'm like, what is Esquire? And they're like trying to tell you how hot they are. And I'm like, just show me American Ninja Warrior. I don't want to see anything else. But I got to be honest with you. It's on so many times. I love it. I see it 13 times a day. I don't care. I'm completely in love with these people. And they have like 4 women. They have like all these guys. And they're all skinny. Did you notice that? They're all skinny. You have some guy who like was the worst drunk in the whole wide world and has now become fabulous again. And he's like 6 feet tall and he weighs 130 pounds. You know, and I've made my comeback, and they all have some horrible. And some woman, this man is doing this for her because she's in a wheelchair and they don't know if she'll be around. Oh, it's very involved. Very involved. I'm going to be the American Ninja Warrior. I'm going to be the American Ninja Legend. But I'm not going to do a 2016. I figure the first quarter of 2017, that's when I'll do it. And I think I'll be fabulous, if you want to know. I'm going to be trying most of this, if I possibly can. By the way, what happened to that guy Snuka, Superfly Snuka? He's like 72 years old. And they said, we got you for something you did 30 years ago. And I thought to myself, they can find out what you did 30 years ago? I didn't like that too much. I was like, what did he do? I mean, I understand he killed his girlfriend. Nothing, you know, nothing too exciting. But then I started thinking, they can find out today what you did 30 years ago? And I'm thinking, oh, no, I got to look through these things. I'm very confused about this now. I don't think I like it. There are many things I wouldn't like you to know about, I don't think. I think when you're 20 and you're doing stuff, I don't think at 50 you want to know about this, do you? I don't think so anyway. All right, we have stuff to do. I have to do another one of these podcasts. Oh, God. It's an entire day of my life has just gone like this. Will you join us for the lovely, what's it called? It's on iTunes. It's on Radio Influence Channel. It's on TuneIn Radio. And it's also on Stitcher. And I have somehow gotten this on my phone so that I know what I'm doing, sort of. So that's what's going on. Play around with us. And you know what? If you're good, we'll do this again the next time around, because after all, I am the fabulous sports babe.
If you know the babe at all, you know the show never ends.
Don't believe me, just watch.
Follow her on Twitter at RealSportsBabe and subscribe to the show on iTunes. This is the fabulous sports babe on Radio Info.